podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 anytime. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, festive greetings. My name is Dave Kellner and a warm welcome along to the Punt podcast. Coming up, we'll talk to the Daily Mail's Matt Barlow about Jose Mourinho's sour grapes following Manchester United's defeat at Ashton Gate. But is the competition still being devalued by the Premier League's elite? We'll also speak about those unsung heroes as we hit the halfway point in the top flight. Pete Farris, Gav Poshlowski and Al Ross are on hand with their best bets in the Football League. And we also have a view on El Clasico this weekend as well. That's all to come. But first, the two stalwarts of the Punt podcast here to look at the TV games. It's a delight to welcome William Hill's Andy Excel and Derek McGovern. Let's get stuck into it then, chaps. We've got a big weekend coming up and we start with Arsenal versus Liverpool, which is live on Friday night. Arsenal are 29-20 to win this game. The draw 5-2 with Liverpool 7-4. Enhanced odds, Alexis Sanchez to score and Arsenal to win was 5-2. That's been enhanced to 3-1. And Mohamed Salah to score and Liverpool to win was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 7-2. Derek, you don't want to use cliches when it comes to a game like this, but Liverpool have just been so Jekyll and Hyde this season. They can look sensational one week and then unable to hit a cow's arse with a banjo the next week. What's the reason for the lack of consistency that Liverpool have shown this season?
Jeez, if I knew that, Dave, I'd be managing in the Premier League on double even your salary. It's just impossible to know. Jürgen Klopp doesn't know. But I mean, Arsenal are pretty much the same, aren't they? I mean, they run hot and cold more than my shower, Arsenal. You can never catch them, right? Liverpool have played 18 Premier League games this season, and I've given a ruinous chip in 17 of those matches. Still a step up on last season, mate. But it's just, I tell you what, you know, Friday night, Arsenal Liverpool games on a Friday night, heavy dragons for Liverpool. The worst five words in the English language, it's up for grabs now. Worse even than there's a replacement bus service. It just gives me shivers whenever I see that goal on telly again, the Michael Thomas goal, of course, way back in the 90s, that won Arsenal the title on the last day of the season. You know, Arsenal are in big... Liverpool have got problems, we know that. But Arsenal have got bigger problems in my eyes. You always know they've got problems when they start talking about Jack Wilshere being the solution. This is Jack Wilshere, who hasn't played three consecutive Premier League games in a row since 2014. In fact, you know, I'm pretty sure if I checked, I'll find he hasn't played three consecutive minutes in a row in that time. They're saying that it's time for him to stand up and be counted. He said he was standing. He's a very small man, you see, Jack Wilshere. I can't have him. I know that Andy loves him. I can't have him. I can't have Arsenal. The fans here are well fed up. They've turned the Emirates into a library. In fact, you know when a referee takes out his notebook there, he doesn't return it for 2 weeks. That's how bad it is over there. Can you imagine the atmosphere there on Friday if Arsenal are being held 0-0 with only 20 minutes remaining? It'll be like the atmosphere in Anfield when Liverpool are being held 0-0 with only 20 minutes remaining, only with fewer Norwegians there. It's just, I'm not sure. There's been one 0-0 draw in the last six games between these two. It's not going to be a 0-0 draw this time. Liverpool have scored 3-3, 4-4 the last four times they've played Arsenal. It would have been a lot more if Per Mertesacker hadn't been injured for a couple of those clashes. I think Liverpool are certainties. I keep blowing hot and cold about Liverpool, but on their day, you know, they're sensational. We've seen it. You know, they're unplayable on their day. And I think given 7-4 against to beat a very beatable Arsenal team, I think that's a real bet to get your Christmas money in. I've said that about four times over the last few weeks. every one of them's gone pear-shaped. But this is it. I have the law on my side, the law of averages.
7-4 Liverpool, Derek's bet. I think as far as Arsenal are concerned, Andy, it's widely accepted that they are not playing particularly well at the moment. They've only conceded once in four games, but the performance against Newcastle in the second half, especially left a lot to be desired. And there's a feeling that the futures of Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil are of great concern, and they may be overshadowing what's happening on the actual pitch.
Well, I'm going to shock the world here and agree with Derek on a lot of what he's just said in relation to this game. I think this is a terrible matchup for Arsenal. Just on player for player, I think this is one of the worst matchups they could face. And I really am quite fearful. Derek's right as well about the atmosphere there at the Emirates. It is just a bubbling cauldron waiting to explode of people not believing. So I'm going to be with Liverpool here as well. And it's for the reason you've just said, there's no cutting edge in the final third at the moment for Arsenal. Mm. And I can't really put my finger on why that is, because I think the players are actually trying, and they're trying to do it, but it's just not happening, whereas it is happening for Liverpool. So I think this is going to be a Liverpool win in probably a high-scoring game.
Liverpool to win and over 2.5 goals in the game could be worth a look, and that's available at 23-10. And if you think Liverpool are going to win and both teams are going to score in the game, that's available at 16-5. On to Everton versus Chelsea at Goodison. This is a 12:30 kickoff on Saturday. Everton are 9-2 to win the game. The draw 14-5 with Chelsea in the market at 8-13. Enhanced odds, Wayne Rooney to score and Everton to win was 8-1. That's been enhanced to 10-1. And Eden Hazard to score and Chelsea to win was 6-4. That's been boosted to 2-1. It's been a strange few weeks, Andy. We've had three new old managers come into clubs, with Roy Hodgson at Palace and David Moyes at West Ham and Sam Allardyce here at Everton. And they've all done reasonably well. I'm hoping that doesn't mean we're going to have more of those xenophobic outbursts from pundits saying that what we need is every time a job becomes available, Tony Pulis needs to step into the breach. But Sam Allardyce has done reasonably well at Everton since he took over.
Yeah, reasonably well. He's had a bit few breaks as well. He's had a good set of fixtures to run with. And he's done what he's always done. Do you know what I mean? It's the same old with him. It's not something you want to turn up and watch. And I'd be interested how Everton fans take to that down the road with their past of wanting to play football. But he can grind out results, and this is what he's going to try and do here as well. But he's got a job on against Chelsea. But you wouldn't rule it out. I mean, it's a really difficult game to pick, I think. And you wouldn't be far away with a draw, I don't think. You can say you can query the appointment still, even with the results, because he's not going to take them further than X, which is where they are now. You know, if you're thinking they're going to get into Europe under Sam Allardyce, think again. So he'll take them so far, and he's doing that job, but then they're going to need to look for somebody else after that.
I think it's an important point that Andy makes about those set of fixtures as well, Derek. Those wins that they've had since Allardyce came in have come against West Ham, Huddersfield, Apollon, Newcastle and Swansea. They had that draw against Liverpool as well, where they were pretty dire, in all honesty, for 90 yeah. minutes. Those are all bottom half teams, and at least three of those will be involved in some sort of battle for survival at the end of the season as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you count the West Ham game, because he wasn't really in charge for that one, although he'd been appointed. But yeah, three of those matches were at home as well, you know, so they were expected to win. In fact, I think they were odds on to win in each of them. I mean, it is the same old from Big Sam. They were the only decent team they played in that spell with Liverpool, and they got marmalised. We saw what they were like on Monday. That was unwatchable, that game against Swansea. I know it looked like a comfortable victory in the end for them, but it was an unwatchable game. And his response to fans who slate his style, Big Sam, is always, if you want entertainment, go to the theatre. Well, that suggests he's never been too bothered by the wishes of fans, and he's never been to the theatre. I mean, it's just absolutely appalling, Everton, at the moment. And I know they're getting the results, and fans will say, well, look where we are now, you know, compared to where we were. But it doesn't matter. Football's got to be a bit about enjoyment, hasn't it? And there's none. Mm. There's absolutely zilch being an Everton fan right now. This could be the fourth time in 2017 that Chelsea have beaten Everton. Fourth time in the calendar year. Actually, I'll rephrase that. This will be the fourth time in 2017 that Chelsea have beaten Everton. They've lost their three Premier League games against Chelsea by an aggregate score, the last three, of 10-0. It could be that in this game. But I think Chelsea are absolute certainties here. And I know they're only, 8-13, did you say, Dave?
Yeah, they're 8-13, yeah.
you know, 8 to 30, and it's normally a cue for me to, you know, look somewhere else, but not on this occasion. It's absolutely buying money, and that's basically the only thing I can afford now with Christmas here.
We can do the double with Liverpool. Wayne Rooney, 12 to 5 to score any time, by the way. 10 goals in 16 Premier League appearances for Wayne Rooney. That can't continue, can it, Derek? I was convinced he was absolutely shot to pieces, Wayne Rooney, but he's proved me wrong.
There's been penalties there. There's been tap-ins. You know, come on. I mean, Big Sam's going on about to me. He could carry on a few more years. But have you seen the state of Rooney? He's carrying a bit of timber. But I've been thinking he's scoring goals. He's putting on weight. He's scoring goals. So he's not quite clinically obese, but he's more obesely clinical. I love that line. I just have to get that one in.
Hello, Mark Walton here, looking ahead to the best of the European football this week, and there's only one match we could consider: El Clásico, Real Madrid against Barcelona. It's arguably the biggest game in European club football, so naturally, the punt has drafted in a big gun. Also, rather flatteringly, I thought, they said I reminded them of the Brazilian Ronaldo, who of course has played for both of the Spanish giants. I presumed that was down to my silky skills on the football pitch, but apparently it's because I have a similar physique to the back end of his career. Cheers, lads. Anyway, El Clásico, midday on Saturday at the Bernabeu, an early Christmas present for any football fan. Real Madrid 6-5, the draw 11-4, and Barcelona are 2-1. Real have held the advantage in this fixture recently, winning both legs of the Super Cup earlier in the year. But when it comes to recent La Liga meetings, Barca have won 3 of the last 5 between the two sides. If we take a look at the season's domestic form as well, it points firmly in the direction of the Catalan club. Barca are 6 points clear at the top of La Liga, with Real only fourth and 11 points behind their biggest rivals. Real do have a game in hand, a win here and a win in that game, and suddenly the gap is down to 5 points and they're back in it. Whatever they do, though, they'll be desperate not to lose this. So I think they could aim to keep a more solid approach, as they have recently. They've kept 4 clean sheets in the last 5 league games and 4 in the last 5 at the Bernabeu as well. Now, I'm not saying they can shut out Barcelona here, but adding to the mix that Barca have been doing the majority of their goal scoring in the second half recently, there have been under 1.5 goals in the first half of 3 of Barca's last 5 matches. And 8-11, under 1.5 first half match goals. Looks pretty interesting. Of course, we can't talk about El Clásico without mentioning Messi and Ronaldo. With 41 goals between them in this fixture alone, Ronaldo and Messi both to score any time, whilst incredibly obvious, is still fairly interesting at 19-10. Both players are subject to the headline offers as well, depending on which side of the fence you're leaning. And this fixture almost always promises goals as well. I know I've mentioned that I think it will be fairly tight in the first half. That doesn't mean we won't see a few goals in the second, and 11 of the last 12 La Liga meetings between these two sides have seen over 2.5 goals scored. The traders are onto that. It's 4-11, but I've got a feeling Barcelona come out on top here, and Barca to win and over 2.5 match goals looks unbelievably tempting at 12-5.
Burnley 11-2 to win this match. The draw 14-5. With Spurs 8-15. Enhanced odds, Chris Wood to score and Burnley to win was 8-1, that's now 10-1. And Christian Eriksen to score and Spurs to win was 12-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1. I think, Derek, this is a very interesting game from a betting perspective.
Yeah.
Because the narrative at the moment is that Burnley are brilliant and Spurs are going through a bad spell. Sean Dyche is an exceptional manager, and perhaps we anointed Mauricio Pochettino as the second coming slightly prematurely. That's the narrative at the moment. Spurs come into this on the back of that shellacking at the hands of City, while Burnley are unbeaten in 3 without conceding. But the betting markets completely ignore that narrative.
Exactly. It's absolutely incredible that Burnley are above Tottenham in the halfway point of the season. We're not talking like after 3 or 4 games, just the halfway point of the season. Burnley are at home and they're 11-2 and Tottenham are 8-15. If these weren't called Burnley and Tottenham, you'd be putting your mortgage on Burnley right now. I might still do that, by the way. It's just ridiculous. The prices are ridiculous. It's all about reputation. And, you know, there isn't a single punter with more than half a brain cell that will go for Tottenham at 8-15 in this game. Because it's illogical. It's totally illogical. Burnley being a revelation. They kept 6 clean sheets in their last 8 home Premier League games. They're playing a Spurs side. It was only 2 or 3 players, you'd say, are better than most people in the Premier League. They can't kick a ball straight at the moment. Harry Kane, Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen. I mean, I wouldn't be a big surprise if Burnley finished above Tottenham at the end of the season. In fact, they're dreaming of Champions League football, Burnley fans, if someone gets them BT Sport for Christmas. I mean, it's just... Spurs can't seem to put 2 good performances together. I watched them against Man City last week. They couldn't put 2 good passes together. It's the battle for sixth place, this one. And I, you know what? If I had to bet on it now, I'd put Burnley to finish above Tottenham. Seriously, because they're doing everything right. Tottenham are doing very, very few things right.
11-2 Burnley for Derek. Price must be taken. To be fair to Spurs, Andy, Pochettino's not had his personnel to set up how he wished to set up against Manchester City. He'd love to have played three at the back in that game with wing-backs, but given that Toby Alderweireld's still out and Davinson Sanchez was serving his suspension, he couldn't do that. Sanchez is back for this game, and I think team news is going to be critical here because James Tarkowski's could face a three-match ban following his incident with Glenn Murray at the weekend. If he gets banned, that would be a big miss for Burnley.
Yeah, that might upset their defensive stability a good deal because I think he's been exceptional this year. And I think he should be getting a look for England at some point on his form this season. Tottenham, again, like you say, they without Alderweireld, and the one that's not getting mentioned very much is Vincent Wanyama, who's been out for a while. That spine up the centre, and moving Eric Dier, who's just completely out of form at the moment. He is Dier. I'm with Derek. The prices really reflect the reputation of the teams rather than the actual current form. And you could only be with Burnley in this game if you're having a bet.
Is this the sort of game, Andy, from a bookmaking perspective, a compiling perspective, you're looking to get Spurs in the book here? You're happy to take as much as you want on Spurs, particularly in accumulators?
Yes. Yeah. and the flip side of that is that you're just, particularly over the Christmas period, you know there's going to be a huge volume of accumulators, including all the same teams primarily, and people just do go by Tottenham are going to beat Burnley. Mm. They don't even look at the league table. So
can I just add one thing there then? But Tottenham, on what planet is this, right? I hope you haven't got any a part in to play in these odds, but Tottenham are shorter to win at Burnley than Chelsea are to win at Everton. How does that make sense?
Sometimes market forces don't make sense. And that's the world we live in these days. It's bookmaking that isn't the same as it used to be, where you just put a view out and you lay it and then change it. Now you sort of predict market forces in advance, and this is what we get now. You will see people. I view Tottenham fans as one of the most loyal bunch of punting fans in the world. There's teams that it doesn't matter what the situation is, they will bet them, and Tottenham are one of those. So, that's really what the prices reflect, market forces.
Are you going with Burnley then, Andy?
Yeah.
Two thumbs up for Burnley in that game against Spurs. We finish with Leicester versus Manchester United, which is 7:45 on Saturday, this one. And Leicester are 17-5 to win the game. The draw 13-5 with Manchester United in the betting at 4-5. Enhanced odds, Jamie Vardy to score and Leicester to win was 5-1. That's now 7-1. And Romelu Lukaku to score and Manchester United to win was 13-8. That's been enhanced to 2-1. I was surprised, Andy, looking at these odds, how short Manchester United are here. This sets up brilliantly, in my opinion, for Leicester. Big game under the lights in front of that crowd, which are notoriously... They'll create an atmosphere there at the King Power, definitely for this game. And there'll be some anger at their performance last weekend at home against Crystal Palace as well. I think there'll be... They'll be bang up for this, Leicester. I was surprised they were as big as 17-5 in the market.
Yeah, again, it's probably something to do with what we were just talking about. This is the last of the big teams playing.
Yeah.
And you might have everything running onto them, as it were. So you there's a bit of protectionism in there against that. Having said that, I would have agreed with you 7 days ago. But then that unfathomable performance against Crystal Palace, and then what was ended up was a real kick in the teeth midweek against Man City, where they played basically the first team. It's they should be up for it, but can they bring themselves up for it again? It's two teams that want to play on the counter. It could be a real standoff here. It could be like watching the worst boxing fight for the first six rounds that you're ever going to see until somebody actually goes for it. But I think United have probably just got the quality to get home, but it's not really one I'm going to be looking forward to watching, to be honest, because I think it's going to be quite standoffish.
Do you think under 2.5 goals is worth a bet then at 10-11, given what you've just said about the makeup of both teams?
Yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah. Derek, how do you view this?
And it's got a persuasive case there, Andy. It's like, you know, two counter punches, isn't it? But it's styles that make a boxing match, and it's the styles that will make this match or not make this match, as Andy's outlined. It is two teams who like to play on the break. This could be a very low-scoring game. Yeah, I can see that. United at 4-5 is a joke of a price. Mm. I mean, it was great to see them getting chinned in that late goal the other night, wasn't it? I mean, they've been scoring late goals since the dawn of added time, and it was nice for once for them to go down. And Bristol City was sensational, by the way. I'd love to see a bit more of them. I think Leicester a big price, you know. That was unfathomable is the right word to describe that performance result against Palace. But they hadn't done that much wrong, you know, in the run-up to that. Some great results that they've been having. They beat Tottenham, by the way, after King Power. I don't think there's much to choose between these two sides, and I'm surprised Leicester are as big as 17-5. United are so beatable. They're massively, massively overrated. Then again, I've been saying that every season for the last 25 years, and they've been picking up silverware every season. Too big, Leicester. I'm sorry, 17-5, just too big.
I'm with you. Leicester to win the game and under 2.5 goals, if you think they can just maybe nick it by the odd goal, is 13-2, which is a decent price as well.
Hello everyone, Merry Christmas. I'd like to give you some winning naps, so I'm going to look at the horse racing naps table and do just that. Tom Morley had a winner at 2-1 with Noble Behest. Well done, Tom. And Darren Owen, famous BBC horse racing commentator and regular on William Hill Racing Radio, also had a winner at 7-2 with Lakefield. Pete did have a winner last week, so well done, Pete. And I'm sure that Derek, Andy, DK, Gav, Al, the Euro Boys and Pete himself are going to give you a beautiful Christmas present in the shape of a perfectly formed nap. A winning treble wouldn't go amiss, chaps. Like the three wise men, let's bring this home for Christmas, eh?
Oh, my God. Thank God Huddersfield are playing Southampton. Because I can't oppose Huddersfield now, because Southampton are too short, as they always are, 4-7.
I was waiting to hear your view on that game.
Oh, my God. That's the worst tip of all time now. I mean, you know, if you put the top 10 worst tips of all time, 9 of them would be mine, I think, including that one. It's a tough set of fixtures this week. I do like Liverpool at 7-4. I really do. I think that's a great bet. Chelsea will beat Everton, but it's too short. You know what, I've got a sneaking fancy for that derby. Well, do you call it a derby? Stoke, West Brom, they hate each other, that's for sure. I'm no fan of West Brom, but Stoke, everybody's beating Stoke these days. Poor side. Mm. West Brom 13-5. The only danger to that is a 0-0 draw, but I want to oppose Stoke. I'm going to go for West Brom at 13-5. It's not with the confidence I had Watford last week, by the way, you'll be pleased to know. But 13-5, West Brom looks a good one.
You need Huddersfield to get relegated, don't you, Derek?
You know, I'm still. You know what? You're looking at the table now, and they look safe. But not only will they get relegated, I'm convinced they'll finish bottom. Now that Swansea going to get a new manager, you'll hope for a little bit of improvement there. Swansea or Huddersfield for the bottom team. I'm going to have to back Huddersfield. I still think they're absolutely diabolical.
They're 5-2 to go down now, Huddersfield. Never mind finish bottom, Derek. So 5-2 for relegation.
They'll go down.
What's your nap, Andy?
He must get such a joyful post back from Huddersfield.
What's he ever done? What's Huddersfield ever done to him?
Andy, to him, what have they done to anybody?
What's your nap, Andy?
Well, before Derek went on that where he's gone, I would have put Stoke up.
Really?
Possibly. Because I just think West Brom are even worse. It's two bad teams, but I think Stoke have got something and West Brom have got nothing. But I'll steer away from that one now, and I will go Burnley. I just think they're over. I still, like I say, I just at home, as Derek said, it's 6-7. How do you work out that one's such a massive outsider? So I think it's just market forces leading you away from percentages, and I work in percentages, so I'll go with Burnley.
11-2 Burnley to win the game, and I'm going with Leicester to beat Manchester United. I think they are definitely overpriced this weekend, 17-5.
Yeah. Apart from my one, that's a great treble.
You know what? It pays 101-1 that treble.
Oh, lovely. I will be having a dabble on that, that's for sure.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag YourOdds to @William Hill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, it's a delight to be joined by Matt Barlow, a football journalist for the Daily Mail, who joins myself and Derek McGovern on the podcast now. First of all, a warm welcome. Good morning to you, Matt.
Morning, gents.
How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you. Yes, all good.
We better start with that game last night. We're recording this on Thursday morning, and an amazing result at Ashton Gate with Bristol City knocking out Manchester United in the EFL Cup. And the most surprising aspect of that was that Manchester United, having... I was going to discuss how the top teams devalue this cup by fielding weakened sides. The ironic thing is Manchester United put out a reasonably strong side. Marcus Rashford, Anthony Martial and Paul Pogba all started, but they were the team that got knocked out of the competition.
The biggest clubs now can rest players, can't they, and still make it look as if that's a strong team. Manchester United and City and Chelsea all fall into that category, I think, don't they? Mm. A strong team, but, I mean, brilliant scenes. Unless you're a Manchester United fan, of course, a great result for the competition and the image of some of the fans and the City players celebrating, the Bristol City players celebrating, and the manager picking up the ball boy and throwing him around, was the sort of things that they're going to use to market this competition, aren't they? Because we talk as the competition unfolds about whether it's got any value and where its place in the calendar ought to be. But then you get a night like that out of nowhere, and it tells you about it, doesn't it? It reminds you what it can bring and why it still retains some value.
I think it was fantastic, Derek, mainly down to Jose Mourinho's thoughts after the game. He's a man, even though Lee Johnson bought him that bottle of wine, he's still a man that can create sour grapes from a situation like that. And he was a bit disrespectful, I thought, afterwards. He called Bristol City lucky. And anyone that watched that game knows that they weren't lucky. They deserved that victory, in my opinion.
Yeah, too right. You can understand them being upset because that's United's hope to the quadruple gone now. I mean, he was jealous, and that's what you expect from him nowadays. You'd expect a man of his experience to come out and, you know, give Bristol City all the praise they deserved, and to actually use the word lucky as his opening gambit. Well, it was all downhill from there, as it was for United in a competition. And yeah, that something needed to happen to restore respect for the competition. I've always said it, you know, maybe allow the winners to give it a miss the following season, because that's how bad it's been treated. It's like, when you're getting the likes of Bournemouth and teams like that, resting players, it's a competition that maybe has had its day. But then you see what happened last night. And it was sensational. I mean, not just at that game, the Bristol City game, also at Chelsea, the late drama there. Mm. I mean, I've always had the League Cup. It was the Milk Cup, then the Carling Cup, and then it was the Capital One Cup. It was like a mirror image of my passing years. Milk as a kid, lager as a teenager, debt ever after. but now, I don't know, something maybe. I mean, it's got a silly name now, the Carabao Cup or whatever. And the draw in the early stages when it was held about 4 a.m. somewhere in Bangkok, I think it was. Didn't exactly up its prestige, but it's got a new life from what happened last night. I think that was fantastic, and maybe, you know, and Mourinho, by the way, he has treated the competition seriously. He's won it a few times. He likes silverware. It doesn't matter how worthless. I mean, he goes on about how many times he's won the Community Shield, I think. I mean, that's how ridiculous he is. So, I mean, the big clubs treat it with a little bit more seriousness than the little clubs now, which I don't know how that has been allowed to happen. But I'm hoping that what happened last night will keep it alive for a few years yet.
The latest betting, Manchester City 8-13 now to win the Carabao Cup or the League Cup. Chelsea 11-4, Arsenal 4-1, Bristol City outsiders at 25-1. There was a lot of chat on Twitter on Tuesday night, Matt, about Leicester and West Ham in particular fielding weakened sides, given that they aren't battling on multiple fronts. Do you think what's the solution to that? Could we maybe have the final earlier in the season, or not have the semi-finals as two-legged? Do you think these maybe mid-table clubs is maybe slightly disrespectful, but do you think they should be fielding stronger sides in this competition?
I mean, I wish they would. I know they've got the reasons. The fact that the money in the Premier League's taken over to such an extent now that that's everybody's priority, first, second and third, and the cup competitions come in below that. And it does make you wonder, I mean, from the perspective of a fan, that the nights that you remember are nights like that one at Bristol last night. And I wasn't there, but I was at Milton Keynes a couple of years ago when they beat Manchester United. And that's still a night that they'll be talking about there, and they'll be talking about for long into the future. But these nights, when Swansea won the Cup, when Bradford got to Wembley, go back a little bit further, Birmingham, go back into the 90s, Sheffield Wednesday, go back into the 80s, Luton. These teams that have won that competition really cherish the moment. So it makes you wonder why teams don't take it a bit more seriously. You know, we're probably not going to go down. Let's throw what we can at the Cup. But they obviously don't. They've been swayed by money. That now dictates pretty much everything among the Premier League clubs. I don't know if bringing the final forward to the first part of the season helps. It's already early. And I think, just going back to Jose Mourinho, I think that's why some of the top managers like it. It's the competition that they can devote themselves to early, as opposed to the FA Cup, which clashes with the business end of the title race if you're in it, or the top four race if you're in it, or European competition. So that's why I think the FA Cup becomes a bit devalued later in the season. This one's already early. The two-legged semi-finals retained as a bargaining chip, basically, for the moment that all the governing bodies come together, all the stakeholders come together and decide that we're going to have a winter break, and everyone's got to concede something, and that's what the Football League will concede. How do you bring it back to life? The Football League are responsible for two competitions, aren't they? The EFL Trophy, two cup competitions, the EFL Trophy and the Carabao Cup. And they've made a pig's ear of both of them at the moment. I don't know why. I've always thought for a long time that they could merge those two trophies and have it as a proper Football League competition.
Yep.
Including the 72. And if you're obsessed with the Premier League clubs, invite them to send a youth team as they're doing in the Checker Trade Trophy. Is it still called the Checker Trade Trophy?
I always notice the Checker Trade Trophy, even if it has changed name by now.
So I wonder if you can somehow get those three competitions into two. I think I've asked this question before of the various stakeholders. I think it's now an impossible because the lower league clubs like games. They like more games. The more games, the better. Yeah. Of course, money. And you've got sponsors, sponsorships bringing money as well. So I think it's difficult, but I'd love to see that, you know, it clear the calendar, it would redefine the competitions, and it would give it a little bit more meaning, I think.
Let's move away from the EFL Cup now and talk about the Premier League, because we are reaching the halfway point of the season. Derek, who's the most underrated player so far this season? Maybe give us one and then an honourable mention as well.
Well, before I do that, I did a little bit of research. Yes, I did some last night on this. And you can be made to look an absolute sucker a few years from now. If you ever, I'm sure you would play it back again just for the fun of it. I looked at what the Independent did. This is in 2013. So recent history, only 4 years ago. They listed 11 players. I think about 10 of them have disappeared. But these are three Lulus. Dejan Lovren was one of them. Johan Gufran, Newcastle, was another. And here's the Lulu of all time. The 2013, the most underrated player in the Premier League, the Independent reckoned, was Gabriel Agbonlahor. what a whopper that one is. This one is a fear for myself here in giving this one, but I'll give you three players. My number one is Heung Min Son for Spurs. Every time I watch him, I think, how is he not a regular? He causes mayhem every time he plays. If he was Italian, he'd be worth about 100 million. You know, it's just because he's from an Asian country. He seems to be unrated. I think he's a terrific player. Steve Davis of Southampton. Big surprise is that Liverpool haven't bought him. He's a Southampton player. Give him time now. It's not January yet. And Jeff Hendrick of Burnley. I mean, there's a few players who were responsible for Burnley's revival. Would you call it a revival? But, you know, fantastic season.
Yeah.
And I think Hendrick's one of them. Every time I see him, he impresses me. Okay, he's not the silkiest of players, but he's mightily effective. And I like the look of him. I think he'll be at a bigger club soon. But Heung-min Son, can you have underrated players at one of the big six clubs? If you can, he's it.
I think you can. You know what? I think given how influential Paul Pogba's been this season for Manchester United, obviously he's not the most underrated player in the Premier League, but he is one of the most important to Manchester United, yeah, because they play in just a completely different style when he's in the team. When he's absent, there's no one to link that defence to the attack. But when he's there, he's just so important for them this season. We've seen that in the way they've performed. I like those three, though. Son, Davis and Hendrick are Derek's three. Matt, maybe give us a one or two.
Well, Derek, right to give Burnley credit, I think. It's such an incredible first half of the season from them. And I looked at Burnley as well, and they've built so much of what they've done around this well-organised defence. They lost Keane in pre-season for a lot of money to Everton, and they've come in with Tarkowski and Mee have been the new central defensive partnership. And I've been really impressed with Ben Mee whenever I've seen him. And I think he sort of typifies what Burnley are and what Burnley've done well. So I wanted to give him a mention and credit to what Sean Dyche has done at Burnley. But the one that stood out for me, watching a lot of my football as I do in the south and around London, is Doucouré at Watford, who's had an interesting career since he come to Watford. He came and they spent a fair bit of money on him by their standards and sent him on loan to one of the Pozos clubs of Granada in Spain immediately, and then he came back, and then Mazzarri didn't really fancy him last year, but he's got into the team this year under Silva, and he's played in midfield and he's played in every game and he's scored 6 goals. And when you watch him, there's sort of, he gets around the pitch, he breaks stuff up, he wins it, his passing's decent, but I think it's the adding the goals caught the eye. A little bit of Yaya Touré about him, in the way he sort of comes forward and bursts onto things around the edge of the box and lashes stuff in. And the goal he scored last week was a beauty.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, looking back towards the Championship this week, and I'm going to take Preston at 10-11 to beat Nottingham Forest. Forest have been dreadful on the road. I, of course, opposed them last week with Bristol City, and they've conceded 10 goals over the course of their last 4 away games. For Preston, their form is superb, they're playing well, and ultimately they are ruthless. All but 2 of their 9 league wins this season have come by a goal. So, if you want to play that, it's 13-5. Preston -1, Forest +1 on the handicap tie markets at the moment. But Forest are wholly untrustworthy away from home, conceding lots of goals against a side who are ruthless and in very good form indeed. It's a really simple one for me this week. I'm going to take 10-11 Preston North End as my nap of the week. That's the Championship. Let's check in with Gav Puszulowski and League One.
My nap selection in League One this weekend is all about the best side in this division, a side I think will go on to be crowned as champions, 4 points clear at the top. It's all about Wigan to win away at Oxford. Wigan are 5-6 to win away at Oxford, who are 3-1. I think that's a tasty, attractive 5-6 for the side who are on a great run of form. And Oxford at home, well, they don't win games back-to-back. They haven't done that all season. And Oxford last time out did beat Doncaster Rovers. Oxford, when they tend to concede at home, they tend to concede plenty. 3 at home to Rotherham they conceded, 2 at home to Northampton, and Blackburn Rovers came here and won 4-2. And Wigan are on absolute stellar form, won the last 4 games straight, home and away in League One, and away from home, won 2-1 at Scunthorpe, 3-1 at Blackpool, 3-1 at Rotherham, and last time out dismantled Wimbledon by 4-0. Goal scorers are plenty in this Wigan side, with Grigg, Jacobs, Powell, Tony, Dunkley even from the defence getting on the score sheet recently. So Wigan are a bit of an unstoppable force at the moment, and Wigan are 5-6, and I think we can do better than that. I think this will be Wigan to win and over 2.5 goals, and that is my nap at 15-8. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
I try and avoid giving odds on naps in this podcast, but there's one selection that's too tempting to resist. It does mean ignoring Swindon at odds against Crewe, and the eye-poppingly large price on in-form Chesterfield at out-of-form Stevenage, but there's no way of looking past Notts County at 4-5 this week. There was genuine frustration at County that in-form Grimsby got a point last week after County had gone to joint leaders Luton the week before and got an excellent draw. There's no in-form sides this week, though. There's only Cambridge. The draw Grimsby got was only the third time this season County dropped points at home. They'd won their previous 5 there in all competitions, scoring 15. And their record at Meadow Lane in League 2 this season is 1-8, drawn 3, lost none. So 4-5 against almost any side is value. And the goals come from everywhere. Their last 8 have been netted by 7 different players. So Cambridge are going to have to outscore them. Not easy for a side that hasn't netted away in 11 hours of football. Only 5 points gained since the start of November. Their chairman's resigned. he's not giving interviews about why. And the manager's been given the weakest possible vote of confidence, with a club director telling the local BBC station, Sean Derry will be head coach over this Christmas period. He is our head coach and will look after our team for a significant period of our season in the next 8 days. It's the sort of rousing rhetoric that Bill Pullman's character in Independence Day could only dream of giving. And there'll be no rough housing either. Anthony Backhouse has reffed 8 League Two matches this season, giving 6 red cards, plus 27 yellows and 4 penalties. Insert your own cards a Christmas joke here. A red card in this one shouldn't be 9-2, but more importantly, Notts County shouldn't be 4-5. They're this week's festive nap.
That's it for this edition of the Punt Podcast, but do not panic. We will have another podcast out on Christmas Eve ahead of the Boxing Day fixtures. Derek McGovern and Andy Excel will be back for all that alongside myself, Dave Kellner. Check out all the betting for this weekend's football by going to sports.williamhill.com. You can access this podcast via audioboom.com. Just type in the Punt, and it does live at the usual podcast places as well. Good luck with your bets, whatever you're punting this weekend, and we'll be back for those Boxing Day fixtures on Christmas Eve.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.